mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 426. I'm Adam, and Night Night Nyssa is Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
I made that one up.
Don't be silly. You can't mend people, can you? You can't mend people.
All right, steady on. Mary Lang.
An apple a day keeps the... never mind.
And Rhys Parton.
Doing the diva loca.
And of course, we're hoping that Robert might be able to sort his issues out with his equipment and join us because he's faffing around a few miles away next door to Rhys. Maybe you could pop around next door and fix it for him.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'll just head off now.
Yes, this week we're going to be looking at Kinda.
That's what Alexa says when I ask her about things. I put Kinda recording on my calendar. I asked her what was on the calendar today. She said Kinda.
Debbie Melrose can't make it this week because she's not very well. I think we need to prescribe her with some tonics and stuff because she does get ill from time to time, and so. Hopefully she might listen in and she might feel better. Mind you, that's highly unlikely, isn't it? Right, we got some stuff going through on the feed. Lillian Robin said running late. Mary Lang said waiting. You were telling her, weren't you, why we were late? And then Lillian said, I heard you say you were not starting yet. And so we're going to start with episode one of Kinda. This is me, my kind of life, my kind of life, yes, and I like it. It's a song by Cliff Richard, by the way. Oh, the Americans won't know who Cliff Richard is, will they?
Sorry, I'm grabbing my McRibs. They just arrived.
Fantastic. I thought you... I'm just Googling Cliff Richard. I've had a vibration on my phone, which says...
Good vibration.
I'll reboot. That's Robert rebooting, and I've got a message from the Badminton Club as well. Kinda, right then. Here we go. Kinda is written by... Who's that written? Is it written by? I can't remember who wrote it.
It's written by Christopher Bailey.
Oh. Yeah. And it begins with an old 1940s film star from Great Britain and some sleepy bloke from The Bill who are in some sort of... what should you call it? It's a base, I suppose, because hence base under siege. And it's a dome.
I say, judging from the closing credits of each episode, I'd say there's a lot of stars in here. Nobody I ever heard of, but
true.
They're all listed ahead of the regular cast. I know that they must be important.
Well, yeah, the one guy was in, what was that? It's a movie that my wife really likes. Trying to remember.
Dam Busters?
Yes, Dam Busters.
Get in!
and of course, Mary Morris is well known for being one of the best number twos.
What are you talking about?
The Prisoner.
I haven't even seen it, and I know what he's talking about.
Hang on. Are we moving ahead here? Because I'm still on the first scene, which I was actually paused to allow Kirby to interrupt.
I really liked the sound design in that.
The sound design?
I like the sound design because they had birds cheeping and all of that because, what was his name? Hindle was meant to be watching that on the monitor, but he'd fallen asleep. And you could hear the sounds from the outside playing inside, and it really sold the idea that they're on a jungle planet, and their uniforms kind of look like a expedition kind of uniform.
Yeah, sort of. I know what you mean. I couldn't think of the words because
look like a recolored version of the Ark in Space uniforms, I thought.
Well, I'd be surprised if the BBC didn't reuse things from time to time. There is a funny scene when Matey puts the sort of mask on and sort of creeps up on. Is it Hindle? And scares him. Anyway, so moving on with the episode, so that we just
took a long time for us to find out these characters' names. They didn't name each other until about 19 minutes in. They always referred to Roberts, who was gone, ironically, because Al Roberts is gone as well. we didn't learn the name of, you know, these characters that are alive and we're talking to for a long time. Mm.
Right, so the next shot is of Tegan sort of having a little stroll by the TARDIS, which has got a very doppeldy sort of paint effect on it for this particular episode, while Nyssa and Adric have a game of draughts, just so as Nyssa's got something to do in the story.
Checkers.
I was about to say.
What'd you say?
Checkers.
Drafts.
Now, Master.
Yes.
My first interruption. Yeah. In the other world that Tegan ends up in, this entire scene is mirrored with that little structure in that world as the TARDIS, and then the two people playing the game.
I've watched this over the years. I've never even twigged on that. So Kirby, this is a first.
That was really
funny. Really?
Yeah. Goodness
me. I thought everyone had seen that.
An eyelash of me.
I've only seen this story twice.
I didn't want to know that. Right then, so yeah, Nyssa, they make an excuse so Nyssa can't be with them, so she has to go back into the TARDIS for a nap.
Yeah,
while
very much like something happening to Yaz in the new, the most recent episodes.
While the Doctor misuses his sonic screwdriver yet again by turning it into some other sort of gadget.
Yeah, his line of, when Adric said, what if we need it? Oh, we won't. Oh, no, why wouldn't we need it?
Yeah, we won't, because John Nathan Turner
says
so.
It's because he's in a Doctor Who episode. Of course he'll need it.
I'll have to see this for myself. As I understand it, it goes poof in the next story.
I beg your pardon?
Ooh.
Poof. It gets destroyed, doesn't it?
Well, wait and see.
I don't know. Let's watch the next story and see.
Yeah, so, yeah, but it changes from metal to plastic. Anyway, moving on. Right, so... Then we meet Neris Hughes, out of the Liver Birds, who's deliberately dressed in a quite sexy sort of secretary garb, you know, with her glasses, her hair up, and a low sort of cut.
And the glasses.
Thingy.
And the dark hose.
She does seem a bit out of place, actually, but anyway, she's there. And I'm just going to skip forward a bit. I can't remember.
That was a fun scene between Hindle and what's his name?
I'm never going to get their names.
Sanders.
Oh, is it?
It was interesting because Hindle was trying to confront him, but he was too afraid to look at him. And I thought that was a good bit of acting, especially when you see later on, to slightly spoil it, he's acting very childlike later on, literally regressing to a child.
Yeah, what I didn't get, and I've watched a few times, what makes him go a bit bonkers?
I couldn't quite pick up on that either, actually. Well,
I read that there were some scenes that were cut out where he was treated pretty badly by, who's the head guy? Saunders?
Saunders.
He was treated pretty badly by the head guy, which, you know, might explain, but who knows?
There was a line... The Doctor says something like, from what I could see, he's on the edge of a meltdown. And then
and he melts down.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, you know, how do you see that? None of us are seeing
that. Exactly. So they can cut through. Anyway, so while the Doctor, Tegan and Adric are wandering through the forest, well, jungle or astro pitch with plants and stuff, whatever you want to call it, they come across this sort of area with these girt big wind chimes. Now, when you listen to Mary at certain times of the year, you can hear these chimes out through her sort of kitchen window, can't you, Mary?
That's true.
Mm. That master?
But she has them there to pre-warn tornadoes and hurricanes and stuff. Yes, Kirby.
This is not a bit of trivia that I happen to know or anything. It's a question because I could not research it. But the sound of the chime in the area of the chimes, not... the sound when he actually hit them, but just the general sound as they're kind of vibrating, sounds exactly like the sound of those plants in the cage, the menagerie. In Star Trek.
I didn't get that.
Particularly if you remember the one scene where Spock and Captain Pike are going along, there's these plants with vibrating leaves. Mm. And they both stop them from vibrating. It's that sound.
I didn't get that at all. But I'm not going to give you a point
for that.
And when
they stop them from vibrating, then Spock turns to Captain Pike and he smiles. Because they hadn't figured out his character yet at that point.
No, because you've mentioned that, that made me think of something totally unrelated to what we're talking about. Well, and it, well, it's slightly Doctor Who related, but I just wanted to mention it before I forget. I've been watching on Sky Crime a TV series called Snapped, which is basically a crime series in which family members get killed by other family members because they snapped, hence the title of the series. And while they're sort of, they go back and recap and whatever they do with the episode, it sounds like the TARDIS door opening. And the first sort of couple of episodes I was watching, I thought, hang on, where's that coming from? But it's the TARDIS door opening sound effect, which they have at this particular period. You'll have to watch Snap to know what I'm talking about, but you will hear it constantly through every single episode. There's sort of noise. That's quite good, that. That's the TARDIS door opening.
I'm safe from being able to hear it.
Well, you're not going to watch Snapped. It's an American series.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it American? I've never heard of it.
It is an American series.
I've never heard of it either.
And the funny thing is, was that one of the murders, I think they got the idea of how to try and sort of cover up the murder by watching Snapped. So it came round in full circle a bit there. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
That's enough of the iconic Doors podcast. Next, we'll have Glad to Be in Service.
If you haven't watched Snapped, anybody, it's on Sky Crime. Listen out for the TARDIS doors opening and closing all of them in time. Right, so they, for some reason, Adric and the Doctor sort of leave Tegan, who's already starting to show signs of being hypnotised. I think it's a bit irresponsible, to be fair, to what they do.
I think so.
And then there's some scenes of Sanders doing some exercises and
very poor form.
Neris Hughes not being particularly impressed. By this. And I'm talking.
I looked it up, and it is available in America on the Oxygen channel, which I don't get.
Isn't that weird? An American TV series is difficult to get to see in America. Weird.
A lot of series are difficult to see various ways because of the way that all the streaming services are splitting up two streaming services.
Anyway, they're just showing series 20 at the moment on Sky Crime.
Yeah. Oxygen, when you subscribe to a cable service, which I do, there are different tiers. You know, you pay more for higher tiers, which includes more channels. And Oxygen is on one of those higher, you have to pay more for these channels.
Oh, I see.
Tiers. Okay. So.
Back to
I remember when we had cable, but when we had satellite, we had Oxygen.
Yeah,
love is like Oxygen. That's a song by The Sweet. Anyway, so, so Tegan falls asleep. I feel like that myself. Actually, I had a bit of a snooze just before we did the show. I woke myself up snoring. And then the Doctor and Adric stumble across a strange box, which the Doctor has to get inside and... notices there's some strange sort of things that appear to be going into your head, so it implies it's a machine that's controlled by the mind. And whilst Tegan is having a nap, some children arrive in those iconic, wearing those iconic sort of zigzaggy Kinder necklaces, which there was one for sale on eBay several years ago for £100, apparently an original Kinder prop.
So, wow!
Yeah, so you can make them quite easy, don't you?
But yes, good.
Anyway, so bring fruit and babies and stuff for the.
That baby was so cute.
Yeah,
that's the only scene that baby's in because apparently she was crying and having all sorts of problems, and it was. I think it's late at night as well.
Mm. And that baby's probably got her own babies now.
Saying, it's too overlit. I can't be here.
These studio lights. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so they give out some things while the Doctor, next scene, the Doctor and Adric are being frog-marched by this machine. Tegan is sleeping in a very uncomfortable way with her legs folded up to the side.
Which is a bit weird. Master?
Yes, I just knew it was so she could get up easily later on.
Yes.
Yes.
When you see the Doctor and Adric being marched, and there's a cutaway, and then you come back, they've switched sides.
Oh, right.
It's because there's a cut scene where they tried to escape.
Wow. Never noticed that.
Yeah, there's a lot of cut scenes in this.
It's a shame. because normally they have the completely opposite problem, don't they? That they have to pad them out, but this one clearly isn't padded that much. Anyway, well, so
I was going to address it later, but yeah, I was reading that a lot of scenes that would help us understand a few things that were going on were cut out, but then they found out they were too short on time, so then they had to pull Matthew and Janet front in the middle of filming the visitation to pull them back to reshoot the scenes that ended up in that little airlock thing where they argue with each other pad out.
That's weird. You know,
make up for the time they cut.
And you can see the difference because they didn't quite reproduce the airlock properly. The fire extinguisher is a different color and things like that.
God. Anyway, right.
This is the Marion Kirby. What do you call yourself?
Jumping to 9 minutes into the episode.
Yeah. I got that from the info text.
Yes. Well, have I actually properly fallen asleep on this, just dreaming this? Particular. Right, I'm just doing a technical check in the background while you lot are talking nonsense. Okay. And
well, the nonsense
says,
I'll talk about is just how funny Peter Davison is.
Oh, that's fine.
It was at this point when Hindle's pointing the gun at him and he's asked questions and he goes, you know, it's a bit hard to concentrate with the gun pointed at me. And so Sanders, you know, puts Hindle's arm down and he goes, oh, thank you. And he's just, he was a joy to watch him. I really liked him.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a reference to K9 too. Hypothesis unfriendly or something like that. Intention unknown, hypothesis unfriendly, as K9 would say.
Yes.
Anyway, back to this episode. We're still only on number one. So the Doctor and Adric sort of end up in the dome. Sort of, they're sort of forced to come in and get the usual friendly welcome. A sort of weird-looking green, I presume it's a gun, pointed at them.
Yeah.
In a very threatening fashion. And then Nerys Hughes comes up the corridor with a clipboard, and we have another cut back to I like this scene actually, of Tegan asleep in an uncomfortable position, and the camera zooms right into her eye. Now, nowadays, it did go a bit pixely, didn't it? But nowadays, they'd be able to do that really crispy and sharp, but it still looked really, really effective. And
Master? Also got very pretty eyes, by the
way. Who looked pretty?
Master?
Hey. Yes?
The director was a little bit upset because when he was very close in, she blinked, and he didn't want her to blink. But they couldn't reshoot it because that was a very expensive shot.
Oh, okay. But anyway, so that's what I do. And once they're inside Tegan's mind, she's in this sort of black sort of environment. Now, this is a idea that that was sort of enhanced a bit by Stranger Things, that when Eleven was inside her mind and can see all her gubbins or whatever, it was black like this, but she had a huge puddle to walk through. So that's the only thing they added, this sort of puddle. But so well done, Doctor Who, for giving Stranger Things an idea on how to create a mindscape. Anyway, Isabella would not like me saying that. She's not here. She can't hear it. She won't listen to the show, so I got away with it. All right, then. So the Doctor, meanwhile...
I'm hoping that when new Doctor Who comes back, that she will join us again.
Thank you, Robert.
No, she's got a PlayStation upstairs.
Hello.
Oh,
hello.
Robert! Oh, my God, hang on. Oh, I haven't got my jingles folder over. We'll just have to say, hooray! Robert's
hooray!
Here. Right then, so that's where we're going to recap a little bit. And Robert Haynes. Oh,
you forget, I'm now in command. I have the power of life and death over all of you.
I don't think anybody else did that one, did they? And
did
considering,
they?
No, no one did.
And considering mine was made up.
Oh, she knows. Mine was made up too.
Was it?
Really?
I just said the name of the planet to the tune of, I can't even remember the original song now. I just said, doing the Diva Loca.
Yeah, let's not recap, because otherwise the people on the show won't bother listening to it, and that's basically half our listenership. Right then. So the Doctor and Adric are given a bit of a snack by the very hospitable lunatics within
the
dome.
The Doctor swaps the plates.
Apparently that's yogurt.
Is it?
Yeah.
Fascinating. So
yogurt, as they call it in the UK.
Whilst in her mind, Tegan stumbles across some bird from EastEnders and some really weird-looking bloke with sort of hair. And when I say bird from EastEnders, it's actually she played Pauline Fowler's mum, name of which escaped
me. You mean a woman? How disrespectful of you.
Yeah, I kept staring at her thinking, where have I seen her before? You know.
Did you watch the old those episodes of EastEnders from the very beginning, which is the one that she was in?
Well,
I did.
Oh. Yes, but not at the time that they were.
So you have you have watched them sort of back.
Because in America, they started it over, you know, like a whole decade later. They started EastEnders.
Well, anyway.
Otherwise, you'd be forever keep trying to catch up, wouldn't you?
Do believe her name is Anna Wing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Once I heard or read that she had been in EastEnders and who she was, I thought, oh, that's where I've seen her. Mm.
And there was Red Chollis there as Ducker.
Who?
Jeffrey Stewart.
As who?
You know, he was in The Bill, Red
Chollis. Oh, yeah, him. Oh, sorry. Yeah, we've already talked about that. Yeah. Don't say anything that might make Kirby repeat himself. So anyway, Tegan's within her mind and meets the sort of, I suppose it's the Mara bloke, who's very sinister.
Harris.
Yeah, he's got a lot of white.
Who's the Mara bloke?
Well, initially, the initial Mara bloke, who's got Ducker. Red eyes and white skin.
Ducker.
Same to you. That sort of thing.
That's his name.
Tegan's not sort of happy with what's going on, but she goes along with him in it. And of course, within the dome, they've imprisoned some kinder. Tribes people, the kinders don't
kinder
speak.
Kinder surprise,
hey?
Kinder surprise.
the kinder, but to save money on scripts and stuff, and having to pay people for saying lines, the kinder don't say much.
The men don't.
The men, but with the women, you can never stop a woman from talking, can you?
Yeah, that's true. No.
Hey.
Right then, so yeah, then we get the apple a day thingy, don't we? Because the doctor and Nerys Hughes have an apple each, and then we meet what's that weirdo bloke with the long hair, whose acting was a bit suspect.
Harris,
that's Harris. The one. No, you know what I suggest he should have done instead of doing this? You'd have just gone on and been a TV presenter on That's Life and given up acting. Oh, he did that, didn't he?
Which he did.
But yeah, again, quite handy that he wouldn't actually say many lines until he became the Mara, or was inhabited by the Mara. Sorry. So yes, then we move on to trying to get the end of the episode. Well, that chap from The Bill. Starts getting madder and madder as
Simon Rouse.
Him, as the episode goes on, and just starts.
Wasn't he great though?
Oh yeah, they're all the actors. Were good.
Madness.
Madness. No, they didn't. I don't think they played. I think they were split up at this point. Oh no, they weren't, were they? They split up a bit later after this.
I thought you saw Madness just this past summer.
I did. Yes. They did originally split up in the. In the 1990s, I believe, and then they've got back, or was it the 80s, and then got back together again in their current format. Because lots of bands from the 80s and 90s realise that they can get together and make lots of money.
With all of this madness that we see in the dome, I suppose they can call this dome our house.
Oh, very good, Kirby. Not going to need points for it. right, so...
our house in the middle
all right,
of
be quiet. So I'm just moving on a bit because the episode is 20 odd minutes long. We haven't got to the end of it and we've been going for about 30 minutes. So it's great, great going, guys. Brilliant. And then we get to they're trying to clutch straws for a cliffhanger. So the mad bloke from The Bill threatens to kill the doctor in a very, very ferocious and vicious way while being watched by Nerys Hughes and a couple of easily and cheap actors who weren't saying much. Episode 2.
What, they were actors? I thought they were models.
But,
well, I understand that these two have been in other Doctor Who episodes, but they've been covered in latex or other stuff. In fact, one of them was the, one of the child from Full Circle. One of them was
really? I never knew that.
Yep.
Onto the feed, Billy Kirkbright said, Robert is a martyr to the cause, doing this as at, I think he meant to say, a ridiculous hour, but that yet you are there to type that, Billy, so essentially you could do it. Lillian Robin said, hey, and then Billy Kirkbright said, Lillian. I was just interrupting a private conversation there. Back to the episode. Right then, so the bloke from the Dambusters decides to drive the little robot-y thing around the forest.
Total survival suit or whatever they call it.
How was it? And then we meet Hannah, who's an old lady. She's the wise woman. The wise woman. Two things, my lord, must ye know of the wise woman. Oh, I'll carry on. Sorry,
that was a Hannah Cotter.
That was a Blackadder reference that went straight over all your heads. Anyway, so and she's with
Mary Morris.
She's with us.
Andromeda.
Yeah, all right, thank you.
For Andromeda.
Thank you. She's with some hippie girl. For a bit, and then Aris turns up. And he can't speak at this point. He can only speak.
Yeah, he doesn't have much to say yet.
Via his mind.
They're all telepathic. The guys are telepathic.
Yes, I know that.
All of them.
He speaks via his mind.
Telepathetic.
He does some good eye acting, actually, to imply that he's not quite the Mara yet, and that he's a bit scot-free. Anyway, he gets sent off into the woods. Meanwhile, Adric, the Doctor, and Nerys Hughes are locked in a cage. And apparently they've been locked in this cage overnight, and they're trying to entertain each other with Adric showing the Doctor some
Very
magic.
Very small space, though, isn't it?
Mm. And where's the toilet?
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, but nobody can lay down and sleep.
Yeah. And where are they going to sleep anyway? But anyway, now what got me about Adric showing the Doctor the magic? Now the Doctor has been the third Doctor was a bit of a sort of magic person, and not magic as any magic, but he liked to do magic, didn't he? To show off doing magic tricks and stuff like that. So I find it a bit silly that Adric would be showing the Doctor magic.
He's still a fairly new regeneration, remember?
Oh, be quiet. He still would forget how to... The 13th Doctor can remember how to do Venusian Aikido, whatever it's called, so...
It's a hand eye thing.
Bits of padding out, and then that mad bloke from the bill dresses the...
So what are you actually pointing out? Inconsistencies in Doctor Who?
Yes, like I say, the mad bloke from the bill dresses the kinder tribesmen up in exploration Meadows. Uniforms. Yes,
he was D.I. Meadows, wasn't he?
Was he? Okay.
In the bill.
Excuse me. Right. Okay. Where do I?
I forgot to mention. Did anybody notice my chair in the dome?
Yes.
Your chair.
Thank you, Debbie. Glad somebody noticed. Had my name on it.
It was particularly squeaky.
It's because you disappeared.
Yeah, we were talking about that. So
We were.
I know you wanted to make a point of the fact you spotted it first, but that's fair enough.
And it was I thought it was very funny that Nerys Hughes' character is Todd.
Yeah.
And you had a Richard Todd.
Yes, very good. Yes. I forgot the Nerys Hughes' character name was Todd.
That, to be honest,
I wonder with the name Todd. I thought it was a bit odd that they had a Todd.
That was probably his real. Probably his
It's probably his real backstage seat. Yeah.
Directed seat.
Yeah. Anyway, so
The character was probably named before the
actor.
Be quiet. Right.
They've done that, Kirby.
I'm starting to get a headache.
Is that how it works? I thought they made it up on the spot.
Yeah.
He's got a thing. The mad bloke from the bill's got a thing about being in charge. It's got a complex, isn't he, about being in charge? So he does these little scenes where he's sort of using the kinder as troops and telling them to do sort of things like put their hands out.
Give orders.
Yeah, and stuff like that.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
Meanwhile, Richard Todd, as we talk about, ends up in the middle of the forest. And
Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, gets given a box containing some Kentucky Fried Chicken. And his face suddenly goes orange. Obviously, it was a box of oranges.
KFC does to me.
And his eyes go all wide and the camera goes out of focus. So something's happened to him.
He's the red-faced man who always shouts.
Yes.
The Doctor, Adric, and Nerys Hughes Todd find that you can actually sit down in this cage, so they do so, and then Kinder. Now this scene annoyed me a little bit actually, when the Kinder sort of troops come and open the door to the cage, and on the monitor you see Loopy Man from the Bill watching them. Now this sort of thing really annoys me in dramas. They still do it now. Now if he was on the monitor, he'd be looking straight ahead, but because the monitor's got a side view, they've got him, his face sort of slightly side view, as if he would be looking sideways on to the character he's talking to. And they do it in The Big Bang Theory. If you notice some scenes where in Series 4 when Sheldon would be talking to Amy via Skype. So he'd have the laptop in front of him, and you'd see the side-on view, and Amy would be looking at Sheldon side-face-on view, rather than the full sort of, what would they call it with your face when it's a mugshot view, isn't it? So like the viewers are seeing me now. So I'd be talking this if I was talking to somebody over there. I find it really irritating. It's so obvious, but they do it to make it look like the person on the laptop screen is looking directly at the person who's talking to them.
Well, it's just like just like Castrovalva with the doctor looking in the mirror.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing.
It's a very weird angle.
For me, it sort of stands out, especially on Big Bang Theory, because obviously I've sort of seen people in real life talking to people on Skype, and the people are just, because obviously
real
a picture.
People.
Well, there are some actors
in real life
insist on having their faces shot at a certain angle.
I don't think that's why they're doing it.
Certain angles they find unflattering.
I don't think that's why they're doing it. They're doing it because they feel that when you're watching it on the screen, it doesn't look like the person on the monitor is looking at the person they're speaking to.
Yeah, there was a joke about that in that video that I linked to yesterday, the comeuppance of Captain Cat, where the Tom Baker character was complaining about one of the cameramen trying to take him from the wrong angle.
Yeah, yeah, it actually does.
Has no bearing on the story. I just thought I'd mention it. Anyway, so he's I'm going to move the slider along. So after that little scene, we have another little zoom into Tegan's eye. This stage, when I was 16, when this story went out, I had a major infatuation with Janet Fielding.
Not surprised.
But they did that little scene just to show that Tegan's still inside her mind at the moment, asleep essentially. And
they were great scenes, though. They did them very
very
well.
Atmospheric, yes. Sorry, I'm just moving on, because there's lots of scenes in which the Doctor, Neris, Hughes and Adric are looking really, really confused by, the actions of the mad bloke from the Bill. And then Adric, I think, decides to join him.
Again, he goes to the other side.
Yeah, go to the other side. Oh, he's very gullible.
To the other side.
He's a teenager, so he is very impressionable.
Mm.
It was all a ruse.
Meanwhile, back inside Tegan's head, the bloke who's the Mara is trying to get Tegan to agree to...
Ducker.
Same to you.
What's your language?
To basically... hand over the power of the Mara snake. Ship to Tegan.
Unleash the snake.
Yeah, unleash his snake. That's what she said. And the snake crawls across the arms, and then a very sinister looking Janet Fielding stands up with a sort of vine thing around her neck and does a very theatrical stretch.
That's why she's like in that uncomfortable position, so she could get up really easily.
Yeah.
There we go.
She said there was nowhere to sit.
But anyway, so she does theatrical steps. They've sort of painted the teeth red a little bit to make her look a bit...
Now, that's the dental thing.
I was going to say that. It's a disclosing tablet.
It's a what?
It's the stuff... It's a little red tablet that you chew to show where you haven't brushed.
Yeah. Oh, so obviously she has brushed in quite a few places then. So doesn't she look great when she's not Tegan anymore? I love that, because she's it's almost like possessed acting, isn't it? But
she must have enjoyed this.
Yeah, she was great. I really did like that scene. So meanwhile, what's happened now? The mad bloke from the Bill and Adric are sort of
Kindle.
He's got a Kindle, is he? Well, that's irrelevant, really. I don't think Kindle's around this time. Sort of being friendly. And then Richard Todd turns up with a big smiley face and a box of chocolates. And he's lovely. I've got something for you. Have a look. Oh, don't worry. What's in it? What if it might hurt me, sort of thing. So he can't get mad bloke for
I
the
love
bills,
his right childish now. Acting, though. Oh,
God, come on. He's so proper good. Actor, isn't he? Proper actor. And then...
Well, Adric didn't think so.
And then Aris decides to have a nap.
Directions.
Yeah, right. Aris decides to have a sit-down by the chimes, and somebody starts lobbing apples at him from above. Mm. It's the Mara Tegan.
Mara Tegan.
Yeah, and of course, it's not long before Mara Tegan transfers the snake to Aris.
I would love to see the Mara come back, just to see a modern take on that transfer. Well, it could be really terrifying.
If you hang on for a few weeks, yeah. Reese, the Mara does come back, no spoilers.
I meant in the new series.
Oh.
I'm aware that it comes back.
Well, we'll have to watch the next installment. We'll have to watch the next installment of a Mara story to see if it actually would be possible for that to happen. But it's a science fiction fantasy TV series. It could be the son of the Mara or something like that.
You know what they could do? They could play Duran Duran's Union of the Snake.
Anyway, moving back to Doctor Who. This time in the cage. Now, that's another scene. Right. And the scene where Richard Todd, Nerys Hughes and Peter Davison are locked back up in the cage, we see mad bloke from Bill looking straight at us on the monitor. Straight eyes forward.
Are you still going on about that?
What? Yes, I am. But it's off-putting. It's the sort of thing you notice. Straight at us. Eyes forward.
I didn't notice it at all.
And then the next scene you see him is side view because he's looking... I'm going to start harking on about it, but
Master.
Oh, what now?
part of that is that when they filmed they often would have those interactions like that be live interactions, where they had the person on the monitor at the same time talking back and forth. In this case, they did not. They filmed a lot of the. They filmed all of the dome scenes in the first filming block, and then all of the monitor scenes were in the second filming block.
Thank you for that. Right, then, that's normally the bits of information that that Mary provides us with, so I'm quite surprised. Actually, she's still there.
Yeah,
she's still there.
I know it's by, for the purpose of the cliffhanger, but yes? Nerys Hughes' reaction to opening the box was really over the top.
I'm not too sure it wasn't different in episode 3.
Did she catch the snake well, though?
She did.
Mm, anyway. Right, so basically...
I have to admit, I was not expecting the thing to jump out of the box like that.
No, me either.
Yeah, hang on. I'm going to do an audio recapture of this particular scene, if I can. Right, sound up. Here we go. Yeah, okay. I shouldn't get into trouble with copyright reasons, because it's a very short...
What is it, forecasting of Bonnie Langford, huh?
No, she was. That was a proper scream, that was.
Screaming in the key of...
Right. So now we're going to go back to the same thing in episode 3. Sorry, here we go.
Great.
It's a different tone. It's a different tone scream. I know they overdubbed the sting over it to bring up the sound, but it's a different tone scream. Anyway, yeah. So. The scene you'll talk about is if they open the box up and they expect to get a strange orange come out of it, but no, a springy planty thingy comes out of it and makes Nerys Hughes giggle. And then all the lights go off.
He's got a big grin on his face the whole time.
Yeah. Then all the lights go off, and then the Doctor goes all orange, maybe too much sun, and then we see some sort of psychic glimpses of kinder children and babies and the girl with the long hair sort of beckoning, and then we see the Hannah woman looking weird.
Hannah Cotter.
Same to you.
I don't think that we have the baby in this scene.
Where baby was in that scene?
I just saw it.
Okay.
I saw a baby.
Did you?
Oh, good. It's a story that Kirby hasn't seen very much, so he'll accept us.
Anyway, the Doctor and Nerys Hughes manage to escape the dome while all the doors are closing. and leg it into the jungle.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Mara Aris is wreaking havoc everywhere, and Adric is sort of pretending he's one of the team of the lunatics, because they've taken over the base. And then we meet a group of kinder, including a jester bloke. Now, this bloke who plays...
He was brilliant.
He was in Blackadder, I'm pretty sure he was. Do you remember in Blackadder?
Yes, sure he was.
You remember? You know what I'm talking about? In the title sequence. He was the one that was going around annoying Blackadder during the titles in Blackadder 2.
Yeah.
So he's a professional jester.
Yes.
But his happy smile face one with his hand when he went up and down really didn't work because you could see his
that
face.
That was wrong. I can do it better than that.
I can do it better than that, yeah. But I would struggle doing the smile bit, to be fair, as people keep telling me.
You can't smile.
I could do the sulk to sulk. How's
that? Sulk to even more sulk.
Anyway, so the Doctor makes himself friendly by doing a bit of magic, which he's learnt off Adric. Mara Aris turns up and looks all... He's standing up very straight and being all ferocious and talking, which startles...
Oh, he's got the voice!
Yes, the women let him talk. Mind you, he just demands to talk, doesn't he? And then the little bit of acting, a bit of eye acting, shows that Aris is still in there somewhere. And then he goes back to being Mara Aris. And then we have cut back to the lunatic asylum, where they've made a big red button for blowing up the
big red
the whole thing. So, which is
the moment.
Yeah. Big red button.
Now, you can tell this story was made in around 1982 when everybody thought that Ronald Reagan walked around with one of these big red buttons.
Go into the future now, and it's the moment.
Yes.
This one from Christmas Invasion. When I see a big red button, I just want to press it. That's my telling.
You're right there, Reese.
Yes.
Anyway, so they've got a big red button now, which they're thinking about pressing. Shut up. The Doctor and long-haired girl. And
Karina.
Have a little bit of conversation before Neris Hughes, because then he realises, oh, there's a sleepy girl. How could all this have come by? Well, we've got this place where these chimes where you can have a sleep, and the penny drops. Tegan! It's taken them all this two and a half episodes to think about what's happened to Tegan. Bearing in mind, Tegan's his responsibility, essentially. It's very, not very responsible of the Doctor to not think of Tegan. Anyway, so he finds... Yeah. He does find Tegan. I might have skipped past that bit. Hang on. Oh, no, they haven't found Tegan yet. I'll tell a lie. But they do find a cave.
Yeah.
Yes, where... which is the gaff of the Hannah Terracotta woman, whatever she's called. Who's
Hannah Cotta.
Yeah, same to you.
Mary Morris.
Yeah, what about her? And within the cave, they've obviously got some very green light. And she talks very much like a wise woman. A wise woman. Two things, my lord, must ye know of the wise woman. Moving on.
You woman, stay where you are with the idiot.
One, she is a woman. And two, she is
wise.
Oh, you've met her then. No, just a wild stab in the dark, which is deadly what you're going to be getting if you don't become a bit more cooperative. Back to Doctor Who. Anyway, so while they're sat in the cave, almost looking like they're meditating, Aris turns up and just stands in with his staff and, you know, he's sort of looking all manly and stuff. And has a bit of a conversation. He's sort of hypnotised the rest of the kinder, isn't he? Got them all to be mean and horrible.
He's got that silly little vine around his arm, like it's really hiding the snake.
Yes.
Good job. Yeah.
So really we can see it, but apparently nobody else can. So
they're just charmed by his magnificent voice.
I guess.
Adric is struggling, but he is sort of trying to humouring the mad people quite well. In the dome. So he keeps then.
I thought
going.
He was really good in this. People give him a lot.
He is
fact,
very good in this. I like him. He's a good actor. He's good. He's just they turned him into a very irritating character. Adric. Not his fault. It's not Matthew Waterhouse's fault, but they did try to turn him into an irritating character. So while the Doctor and Nerys Hughes and Terracotta Woman are in the cave, some weird sort of graphics started happening outside, almost like a sort of orange version of the Northern Lights, which the Doctor and Nerys Hughes go out and have a watch. And within these Northern Lights are various sort of, because they step into it and disappear, are various sort of scenes.
As one does.
What?
As one does when you step into lights like
of they see the Kinder around a little sort of pathetic-looking stone circle. One of those lovely retro clock radio things with the flippy over time things, counting up to 12 o'clock.
I had one of those.
I've got one in the bathroom. It's not a,
around
it's not
that
a clock
time
radio.
As well.
It always reminds me of Groundhog
around
Day.
Around that time.
Yeah. Very fun, Kirby. Anyway, and it counts up very quickly, and then we have an egg timer and some sort of scary tribal masks. And then at the end of this very orange and atmospheric, innovative scene, the Doctor said it's going to be the end of everything.
I thought that was going to be the episode.
And then, of course, we find out that Hannah Cotter, or whatever she's called, is dead. That's the big thing. She's dead.
Yeah,
but what happens?
That?
No, she's not dead. She's just handed herself her mind over to the young one with the long hair.
She's not dead.
Yeah.
She's not dead yet.
Bring out your dead.
Let's see what's coming through on the live feed. Lillian Robbins says, "I love her tights." Whose tights?
Tegan's.
Really? Well, those purple things.
Shoes.
Todd's tights. She
Todd's
also
tights.
Writes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Todd's tights.
Todd.
Oh, beg your pardon, Lillian.
Oh, yeah. That's Nerys Hughes.
Yeah.
This thing's Richard Todd.
It's amazing. It's amazing, you know, the fact that she's been, crawling through a jungle and stuff. That her, despite the very unusual situation with this jungle, the astroturf everywhere, she hasn't actually laddered these tights at all. It's amazing. Anyway, so the Doctor sort of, we have to go for the explanation of the fact that the mind of Hannah Cotter is now inside this young girl, and that took about 10 minutes. And then Adric is trying to humour the mad minutes. People. Richard Todd is cutting out little men made of cardboard.
I'm looking at Richard Todd and I can't help but imagine him in tights now. Thanks, Robert.
There's a great scene.
Grin on his face too.
While Richard Todd is cutting out these people in out of cardboard, Adric's just sat there, sort of, it's almost like with his jaw open over the madness of the whole situation, as you stand there watching it. And then they do a lovely little scene where they're of sort of talking to these people that they've created.
Yeah, it was really well framed the way Hindle comes towards the camera. Then Saunders is between the two of them, between his face and the little man he's talking to.
Yeah, and that is enough for Adric. He basically legs it at that point. Of course, the Doctor and Nerys Hughes are finally brought to the sleepy Tegan.
Tegan! I remember, she exists!
Yeah. And, well, she's been taken over by the Mara. Oh, maybe I should wake her up. Oh, but it might be too dangerous. Oh, I'll have to do it anyway, because with any luck, she will snuff it. And I won't have another three series of her being on the show. Oh, no, she was
don't
right.
Be so mean.
Wow, oh, you get that. Like no, you get that feeling. I like get that feeling. Right. I love Janet Fielding. It's an amazing asset to Doctor. Anyway, all right, so she's a bit confused. And then Aris Mara, they put a sort of wooden cage over him. And he sort of
now we have a machine like
that's like a cargo cult in the South Pacific where they'd make runways to attract the to bring in cargo by magic.
In the Magic movie, can't South do that. Pacific
He's in the other
play.
Room asleep at the moment. Where is he?
Oh, no, the area is South Pacific.
It's very unusual for Magic to be in the other room asleep. Actually, we got Alicia's dog coming around tomorrow morning. Alicia has a little beagle puppy called Nala. Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
Mara?
Nala. N-A-L-A. Nala.
Lion King.
Yes, Lion King, exactly. Well, Beagle King in this case. Anyway, while escaping the mad people, Adric thought it'd be a good idea to jump in the machine thingy, but he can't drive it. He hasn't got his test, and he's struggling and starts shooting things, including
Aris. It's harder than I thought.
including Aris Mara, who just stood there leaning backwards, and he holds that scared face for about 3 years.
Did you see that? Did you see the flame?
Yes.
He's looking down at it.
Yeah, so
as if
it wasn't actually acting. He wasn't afraid that he was going to get fried. Anyway, so they the doctor talks Adric out of the box and then goes in to visit a few mad people. And
I love it the way he's trying to get the door to come up quicker. He gestures to it to open quicker and then he climbs under it.
Yes. And then, of course... the mad Bill broke his side. That's it. I'm going to press the button. The doctor comes in and... Nereus Hughes gets her box out and says... That sounds very rude, doesn't it? Gets Ooh. Her box out and says, look, I can have this, but you can have it if you like, but as long as you don't open it, sort of thing. Oh, I can blow everything up later, can't I? But in the process of that...
Psychology always works with a child.
somebody, the doctor, I think, treads on one of the men that they've created and a little scuffle ensues.
Yes.
And that's where my quote came from.
Really?
Don't be silly. Stop you can't mend people, can you? You can't mend people.
And then, but he does open it up and everything goes orange and it seems to clear his mind a little bit. And all the bombs are taken down by the doctor and they decide, because they know Pardon?
I like when the doctor, though, he takes it off gingerly and then he just chucks it to Tegan.
It's like a freezer. Yeah. but he's come up with an idea to get the Mara out of Aris, because the Mara, being an evil thing, doesn't like looking at it as
mirrors. Itself.
So they get these mirrors that used to be solar panels, apparently. I thought solar panels were black, but these ones are mirrors. And they arrange them in a circle.
Maybe they focus the rays of the sun on the solar collectors. You know,
maybe so. That's
a
good point.
I think he calls them solar arrays. I think that's their communication device, you know, that they send signals out, you know, and they have the big mirrors that amplify the signal.
Okay.
That's what I took them to be.
So which version of the snake did everyone watch?
The original, myself.
CGI.
Old version.
I watched the original
CGI
version.
CGI for me.
Because it's quite charming.
The first time through, I watched the original, and the second time, the CGI.
I want to get my hands on a copy of
Anyway,
the
so they
CGI
set these
one.
Mirrors up, and they come up with this plan of getting pervert
That's
Mara
what,
Aris to chase a young girl through the jungle into the circle of mirrors, and then we'd have some very funny acting by the chap playing Aris. Aris
Did you Mara. Notice something with the mirrors, though?
What?
With everything going on, not once did I see a reflection of a camera or the studio
well,
lights.
Well, that was because of
the
clever
very
filming.
Very careful of that.
Mm. I thought they did it very well.
Anyway, the snake
also,
the snake
did you
does...
notice the gap that
Sorry.
Was left for the camera?
There was a huge gap.
You
yes.
Inside?
Yes. There was.
Well,
that's true.
Another thing, if you're trying to keep the if you're trying to make the Mara see itself, it has reared up above the mirror.
I know, yeah.
It can't see itself anymore.
Get
Very
down,
good
get
point,
down.
Kirby. Anyway, so there was a battle, and the Mara climbs off the arm and then gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Tegan has a peek when she's told not to. I wonder why. Why has Tegan had
was
a peek?
Was that inside my head?
Could it? Yeah. And it gets so big, and eventually it collapses under its own weight. Oh, sorry, that was Arachnids in the UK, wasn't it? just... explodes in a ray of pinkness, and everybody's back to normal and happy, and the doctor can I
say something though with that? If you're watching the original version of the snake,
yeah,
people always go on about, oh, isn't it a pathetic kind of snake, but the point is it's like a dream sort of imagery, so it doesn't have to look like the real CGI one, so
no.
You know,
it does.
No, I didn't bother
both ways.
Didn't bother me at all. And then, of course, they go back to the TARDIS, and Nissa's still there, just saying, doing a couple of lines. And,
oh, hello. What have you been up to?
And, of course, Nerys Hughes. Why are you going in that box? Can you really go through space and time in that box? Of course not. And the Doctor very smugly sort of implies that they can, and they do. And that is the end
that
of Kinder.
Impossible.
Or Kinder, I should say, sorry.
Yeah.
The end of Kinder. And right then, so at this point, I'm just going to check how much time recording time I've got left. How much recording time I've got.
A big fault. That how does Adric know about Tegan's dream when he hasn't been outside?
They might have had an off-camera conversation about it, Robert.
I watched the deleted and extended scenes.
Nah, that doesn't mean deleted scenes aren't off-camera. They've been filmed. Never mind. I'm not going to go down that road. Right then.
And
so
I believe that Adric knows some of the tribespeople, and he's never met them.
Maybe he had a mind link with them or something.
Yeah.
Never mind. For goodness sake. Right then. Kinder.
It's a science fiction fantasy.
Right. Point deducted for Kirby. Right then. I've lost my wand. Where's that gone?
Why did I get points?
Because you interrupted me about 15 times when I'm trying to say what I think of the story.
That's my job.
No, it isn't. Right then. I got me wand. I use my wand here as a thing to sort of just calm me down when Kirby gets a little bit too annoying. Right, the Kinder was quite a good story, actually. In fact, this time I watched it, I appreciated it more than all the previous times I'd watched it, because I think the acting...
When did you last watch it, then?
Oh, several years ago, with Alicia, so that'd be over 10 years ago. So the acting is top notch. So much from Nerys Hughes. I think Nerys Hughes was struggling a bit, but all the main actors.
I thought it was a great cast.
Yeah, it was. But all the main actors, even Mara when he wasn't speaking, bloke, was okay.
Adrian Mills.
But we're talking about the Base Under Siege actors, the Bill bloke and Richard Todd and all that. Look, absolutely amazing, and obviously that would have been a major treat for Matthew Waterhouse to be in the presence of such talent.
Master, when you finish up, but I have something to say about that.
About what?
It turns out that Matthew Waterhouse was giving the actor who played Sanders acting lessons.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, but that was only because Richard Todd used to do movies. Here he was doing TV. Matthew Waterhouse must have thought... Matthew probably thought, well, here he is. He's done these movies. He doesn't know what a TV station is like, and how you film inside one.
I'm sure they've got over it now. One, I think Richard Todd is dead, and Matthew Waterhouse
made the statement that he had never done TV before, and Matthew overheard that, and so that's what prompted him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we go back to what I think of Kinder?
Yes.
Thank you. Again, when I said I made a mistake of saying at the beginning of this, I've got a limited recording time, so you lot are deliberately trying to sabotage the end of the show. Anyway, so it's very good. I mean, there are obviously bits as I try and take the mickey out of certain aspects of the story, but it's very atmospheric. There's a lot of innovative sort of mindscapes going on, not just inside Tegan's head, but also that scene with the clocks and stuff like that towards the end of the story. Great characters. It's completely different to any Doctor Who of its era.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like a little treasure of Doctor Who, this
particular
story.
Until Snake Dance.
Yeah, but Snake Dance I don't think Snake Dance, as far as I can remember, as good as this.
No.
The Base Under Siege thing, again, works really, really, really well, apart from they can get out quite easily if they want to. And, of course, they shot it in studio again. Amazing that they were able to do this in studio. I still think it would have been fascinating to see it done nowadays. Like Reece said, it would have been.
Yeah.
They could do a really good thing with it. But on the whole, it's a really, really good story. And I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago. I'd say it's an okay story. But, having watched it this time, you can really appreciate the production, the imagination that went into its whole thing, really. And despite its usual, there's always silliness in Doctor Who. That's why we love it. What do you think about it then, Robert?
I absolutely love it. I must admit, when I first watched it, I didn't understand a thing what was going on. But then I got the DVD and I thought, wow, this is really good. And just watching again, I thought, yeah, it is bloody good. And just the, as I mentioned, the actors were very well done. Well, they worked together so well.
An ensemble.
And just the things that you mentioned as well about the, you know, the special effects that they used. And I did, one thing I did complain about though was about the over lighting inside the dome. Yeah. That it grated, and sometimes you could see the obvious limitations of a.
You've been watching too much modern TV, haven't you, Robert?
Yeah, I guess so. But
apart from that one on the space station in the last series, in that space hospital thing that they were in, where the bloke had the baby, that was quite bright white and well lit, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Mm. But yeah, just the jungle and the studio type of thing. Sometimes that really grated me. I mean, I was looking at the floor and thinking, oh, that's just a studio floor painted with
and the doctor tripped over the AstroTurf at some stage, if you remember rightly.
Yeah, I know, as they're climbing over
and,
that.
And they kept having problems with the leaves being moved by the wires,
cameras,
being played by the cameras. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I absolutely loved it, and with or without CGI Snake, it doesn't matter. But yeah, very good, absolutely good. Can't wait to watch Snake Dance again.
Excellent. Well, Auntie Butcher says, where did they get those mirrors? Well, we did explain they were solar panel arrayed, and did say that. Anyway, so are you done, Robert? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Reese, have you seen this story before?
I hadn't.
Well, that's interesting. What do you think of it then?
I really liked it. Wow. I was preparing to take a lot of notes while watching it. And what I do is I usually have two screens and I watch it on one, and I've got a Word document open on the other one, and I can write down little notes, especially to pick up details for quizzes that, you know, we're not having. Hallelujah. but after part two, I wasn't really taking notes because I was really drawn in, and I was fascinated by Hindle's performance. I'm just going to call him that because I don't know his real name.
Simon Rouse,
thank you.
Yeah.
And I really liked Peter Davison. Like, I've seen a few of his stories previously, but I don't think I realised how fun he is. He has a lot of fun in the role and brings in
doctor.
A lot of comedy as well as a few serious turns. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and there are a few things that I would nitpick at, and you mentioned it earlier, where Nyssa is just shunted off into the TARDIS so you can have fewer people to write for. that sort of thing is annoying. And then it makes me wonder why Chibnall bought so many characters into the most recent run of episodes when they can't seem to write for that many.
If I can jump in, it's...
Yeah, go for it.
And we talked about this in the last story that we saw, is that she as a character was not supposed to continue beyond the last story because she had made other acting commitments, so they were going to just have her die at the end of the last story, so there was nothing written for her in this story.
Okay.
So, you know, but then when they decided to carry on with her, you know, they just decided to just kind of make her absent for this story while they could write her into the next few.
Yeah, there are other limitations. I agree that it's overly lit, and I think that can take away some of the atmosphere that you can achieve. But honestly, given what I know about shoestring budgets that it was on and the time that they had to do it in and stuff like that, you could just forget about that. The story's great, and I love the scenes, just little scenes like I think I mentioned earlier when Hindle's pointing the gun at the doctor when he and Adric first arrive, and the doctor's saying, well, it's a bit hard to concentrate with the gun pointed at me, and things like that. I just love the little exchanges between them. Oh, and when they're eating the yogurt, the way he just swaps plates with Adric and then Adric keeps eating.
Yes.
Subtle things like that. Very funny.
He does that a lot, though.
Oh, yeah, so I've heard.
Black Orchid.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I did laugh at the snake. I think it does matter. I think it was a bit laughable, but yes, you can explain that it's a dream snake, but I don't know. It was a bit silly. But the idea of it works, and I quite like it. And like I said, I'd love to see especially the most recent CGI, because the CGI team...
Did you see it was on YouTube, they had a bit of it.
the
if you search it up, the snake, how it looks, the CGI
the new
one.
Oh, okay, yeah, well, I'll check that out. But yeah. I'd love to check. I'd like to see a new version of the Mara, or not a new version, just revisit it if they can. Like Adam said, we'll find out in Snake Dance when we revisit that. Hopefully, I could be a part of that episode too. I'd like it to come back because I think the current CGI team and makeup team could make a really big deal out of being
if they could just employ some of the special effects people who did Stranger Things and create that little great big puddle that Eleven walked around in. That would work really
well. That as well. I was just thinking like the physical possessed version of anyone, you know, occupied by the Mara could also be very terrifying nowadays. It was well acted back then, but it was just a bit of makeup around the eyes and in the mouth and then a snake tattoo. But it was well acted. Good episode. Or good story, even.
Good.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, that leaves us with Kirby.
I thought this was fantastic.
Ooh.
Absolutely excellent. Fantastic. So the best Doctor Who I've ever seen.
And you haven't seen it before?
I have not seen it before. No. I don't know why it took me so long. There are plot holes. There were the usual low-budget nonsense, but it really draws you in.
No, it does.
And it is, the acting is top-notch. Absolutely. All the way around. Yeah. Even Eris, the guy inside the blackness, he was
amazing. They're all good.
Jeffrey Stewart.
Yeah, he was amazing.
He sounded like Joffrey from Game of Thrones. He had a very creepy way, slimy way of talking.
I wouldn't know.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't know either.
and it was just fantastic. I can't wait to see it again. And this is one I will go back and rewatch many times, I can tell. And I'm probably going to watch it again in the next couple of days because Fred is just now catching up. She took a couple of weeks off of watching Doctor Who with me, so we just finished Ford of Doomsday last night, and so she needs to watch this one.
Fantastic. Didn't you watch that? Ford of Doomsday, what? You didn't watch that for last week?
Yes. Yeah, no, I'm saying what? Fred, my daughter.
I know that, but you watched it again.
Yeah, I've now watched it four times, and that was one that up until a couple of weeks ago I had not seen.
That's true. So, now you've overdosed on it.
And by the way, as far as Richard Todd, in 1953 he appeared in BBC television adaptation of Wuthering Heights as Heathcliff. So he's done.
Yeah, but that's 50s television, slightly different from 1980s.
Yeah, I know.
Unbelievable, right?
It's just everyone was making. Apparently, that's something that they bring up to Matthew Waterhouse a lot now, and he's kind of embarrassed by it.
He was a kid, anyway. Are you done, Kirby?
Yeah, he was. He was so young.
Yeah, and by the way, one of the very first Doctor Who books I ever bought, way a long time back, it's actually more of a textbook. It's called Doctor Who: The Unfolding Text. John Tulloch and Manuel Alvarado. It's got a lot.
Got Bessie on the front, is that?
Huh?
Is that got Bessie on the front? Can't remember.
My copy has just got the TARDIS. Anyway, it's got a big chunk of the book is analyzing Kinda. And even though I've had this book for a long time, I never read that section. So I never had a way of seeing Kinda. Up until I got the DVD a few years ago. And yes, I got the DVD, put it on the shelf, and didn't watch it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Just really had it then, isn't it? Are you done?
No. Yes.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, brace yourselves. You never know what's going to happen. It's Mary.
No, that's true. That's
true. Now, I have seen Kinda twice before.
Ooh.
And really enjoyed it. You know, wasn't really, you know, looking for anything particular out of it. So I was so impressed, yes, with the mind time and, you know, and the we and the others and all the wonderful trippy stuff that goes on in it, that I wasn't paying very close attention. But this time, because I was paying close attention, because, of course, I was making notes, assuming Debbie was going to do a quiz. this time that I watched it raised so many questions that there, I don't know what the answers could possibly be, that I found myself so caught up in all of the mysteries that it kind of spoiled my enjoyment. This time around, I was wondering, like, you know, what is it that makes Hindle go crazy so quickly? Because there's no explanation for why he just suddenly goes off the deep end. And why, after Adric states that the people who did disappear left in those in that, you know, armor machine thing, why not just 2 or 3 minutes later does Sanders turn around and say, well, I'm going to go get in that thing and I'm going to go away and I'll see you in a, in a day.
Yeah, that didn't make sense.
Yeah, it made no sense whatsoever. That's how everybody else disappeared.
Yeah, but they're all going stir crazy probably, so...
Well, I don't know. For all we know, maybe they got the box gift, you know, and that transformed them so that they joined the Kindle. I don't know.
Kindle. But,
yeah, there's no explanation given for why the others have disappeared. And why, when it's established that that there has to be a translation, when the old lady who can talk, it's like she can't communicate with the rest of the kinda. She's got to use that girl as kind of a translator. Then when, as the story progresses, I don't know, suddenly that all goes away and everybody can understand anybody who's talking. I just
too much.
I am talking.
Oh. All right, Kirby.
I mean, I can see maybe Eris, but I mean, everybody who talked, the doctor talking, everybody talking was perfectly understood. So I don't know why they went to such lengths to make us think that that once you talk, that you cannot be part of the group mind.
Don't think, just go with it.
Yeah. Let me see. Why, if the legend is that the Mara comes through an unshared mind, why did the villagers, when they come upon Tegan sleeping, why did they like put flowers around her and, you know, tiptoe away? Why did they wake her up?
It's to appease the try and, you know, offer a kind of goods to appease it, to make it lull it, you know.
Yeah, well, and then one that has already been mentioned is once the snake gets really big, you know, can't see the mirrors anymore.
That's what she said.
Why is it still, you know, why is it still being confined by the mirrors?
Because its body was still by the mirrors.
But just nobody.
Go with it. Go with it.
Saying he wasn't seeing in the mirrors.
Yeah, keep them just go with it, Mary.
Mary, Mary. He's got to see himself in the mirrors, Mary. You know, so once he can't see himself,
Mary.
It just doesn't make any sense,
Mary.
Yes.
Just revert to your previous watchings of Kinder and forget about the deep and taking lots of notes for Debbie's
time,
quiz.
That's all that happened was me getting caught up in, well, why this and how come that?
It clearly means that those sort of details really don't matter, do they? Because the previous time you enjoyed it.
But I do agree that it is well acted. It's very creative. And, you know, not knowing, you know, what kind of a budget they were on, wonderful sets and everything. You know, so every other aspect of it is really well done.
Thank you, Mary. Uh-huh. It's now time for the massive amount of feedback that we usually get on the show, or slightly less than. Yes, oh dear. I don't know. Did Kirby posted something? So let's see if anybody responded. Yeah. So almost like a feedback SOS on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. Or I'll just make you join. That probably works a bit better, doesn't it? You 504 members of people that can't be bothered to do anything. Apart from listening to the show, of course.
Now.
Well, feedback. We want feedback, don't we, everybody?
Yes.
All right, then. Let's see what we got. Jeff Waddle, the best story of the Davison era, if only because it is so different. I wouldn't quite say it's the best. I think Cave of Savannah and Zani is pretty good, to be fair. Lillian Robin, the best story of this season, hands down. I haven't seen the rest of this season, though, yet, Lillian. Shh, the original snake prop is rubbish. The CGI one is great. I've got to go with the original because I'm a completion and a traditionalist. Laurie Nick said, one of my favourite Bowie videos of the 80s. Oh. And then it's Ashes to Ashes, which they use the same special effects for, essentially. Laurie Nix. Oh, and no, Adric. Just how many times did the Doctor chastise him? I almost feel sorry for the lad. Well, I mean, after the previous bit of chastisement that he got in Four to Doomsday, which was the most entertaining Adric chastisement of all time, he can keep on doing it. Ian Kirk says, Kinder, the TARDIS crew wander about the jungle. The Kinder are telepathic, so few of them have any lines. The crew of the base go mad. Eventually, after four episodes, the Nara... Is it Nara?
Mara.
Mara, he meant to put it with an N. The Mara is driven away. Nyssa misses the whole thing. Lucky her. I was going to do the Kinder and Vidaloka jokes, but not worth plugging my microphone in because they were already done anyway. Right, so what we can do then is...
And I posted a picture of the book I was referring to.
You did? How wonderful. Where Thank you so much, Kirby.
At the bottom of that...
Yeah, I can see it.
Well, so without further ado, we leave us with one more thing to impart. So here we go, clickety clickety click, and off it goes with the power of the electronic internet doodah thingy. Within a matter of seconds, lands in someone's inbox, and it's been seen at 26 hours here on the 20 megabyte.
And don't forget that Deb put in some feedback as well.
Oh, I'll let you read that one as well, Mary. I'm going to sit back in my chair and listen to Mary's dulcet tones as she does Alan T. Butcher, not in the biblical sense.
The Garden Center Indigenes, or Snakes and Mirrors. Dear 20 megabiters, Kinda is, of course, a closely studied illustration of historical and sociological trends as cyclical in nature and exploitative in character. This Garden of Eden world has its snake, the exploiter, that is, the Mara, its apples, the temptation, and in Tegan, its conduit, that is, Eve. The female hegemony is also manifest in both the fall and the rebirth of civilizations here, as well as the monitoring and maintenance of continuity that is expressed through Panna and Karuna. The resolution, which is merely, in fact, a transition, seems to be arrived at through the employment of mirrors, which perhaps suggested self-knowledge is the key to progression. It should be noted that whilst some suggest the original snake effect was appalling, there is no reason to think that a psychotic alien personification of evil should not be able to manifest itself as a large, unconvincingly rubbery, fake-looking snake.
Yeah.
We also learn that Sandra from the Liverbirds...
Liverbirds!
Liverbirds!
Thank you!
And went on to retrain as the science officer on a colonization survey expedition to the beautiful jungle planet Divaloka. Guy Gibson, on the other hand, survived the Dambuster raids after all, but sadly ended up as a washed out old buffer on the same expedition. Oh, yes, and Holy Zarquan's singing fish, Lubiel, was apparently Zaphod Beeblebrox's mother. All in all, Kinda is a slightly pretentious, not overexciting tale, which does carry one of Doctor Who's greatest virtues. It is unusual. As a 10-year-old, I think I saw it as a bit dull, but now I feel perhaps a little too much going on. K-9 has more action here than at any time since season 17, with the Doctor quoting him once. Davison plays the Doctor as if he's only played it a couple of times before. Nyssa's contractual repose gives Tegan her time in the sun, which turns out to be in the dark. It must be recognized that Simon Rouse's and Mary Morris's performances are phenomenal, and the seriousness of approach from everyone involved never lets this production down. This story is perhaps an infinite number of episodes too short, as given the cycle of rise and fall, it presumably could have gone on forever. Next up, Doctor Who and the Amphibians of Pudding Lane, or You Can't Mend Sonic Screwdrivers. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Well read, Mary.
Yes.
Yeah, they need to make a sequel to this story.
They do?
They did.
I know.
What, Kinder?
I know.
Well, they made a sequel to Kinder. What, on Big Finish? Yes. No? Okay, I'll shut up.
I'm sure they did have one.
Yeah.
I listened to it as well, but I forgot it. Is it called something the Snake or something, Mary? It's got Snake in the title. It's got something of the Snake in the title.
Union of the Snake? Oh, no, that's Duran Duran.
I know, I've heard it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, I've heard it.
Lillian Robbins says, of course I've seen all of this season. So there you go. Essentially, and rather annoyingly, it concludes... Oh, no, we've got Debbie's feedback. I do beg your pardon. We've got the feedback from Mrs. M. Let's see if it's readable by myself. If not, I'll just hand it over to Mary. And now... Oh, here
it
is.
Get Mary to read it.
I'll get Robert to read it.
A strange place for her to put the feedback.
Oh, it's a long one. Mary can read that one. It's very long. Now you've got to do your Debbie, and I don't mean that in a biblical sense either.
Debbie does Dallas.
Hi, guys. I'm not feeling very well at all.
Oh, yeah. So, well, can we do Debbie's feedback, though? Sorry about that, Mary.
I come back and everyone's going down with the plague. I mean, God.
So going home to bed in a bit.
Avoiding him.
My thoughts on Kinda, a great visual journey into dreamland and madness navigated
by...
Does
Debbie speak like that?
The doctor. I remember scenes from my first time watching it as a kid.
No, don't do that.
Sorry. I remember scenes from my first time watching it as it aired with the double helix jewelry, the most familiar. I think I even made one. Adric and Tegan both whinge an awful lot, but considering the confusion going on in and around them, I didn't get as irritated with it as I might have. It is a hard story to keep up with. Nerys Hughes' character could have been a prototype River Song. Undeniable chemistry between her and the Doctor. For the wise to be accorded so with voice, I thought it most unfair to call the Doctor idiot every time the old seer got, but it became a term of affection after the extreme partying of the time vision. I really enjoyed this story, loved the visuals, and that snake at the end was the bonus prize of Who Monsters. Classic. Those are my thoughts for a change. Deborah L. Melrose.
Brilliant, Mary. Hope she hears
that. I gave that a little bounce to your reading, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Right. I do hope she gets to hear that impression of hers that you just did. That was fantastic.
Yes.
I think I sounded more Australian than English.
No, you sounded more like her than she did.
You really did.
Okay, does anybody want to know the name of that Big Finish audio?
No. Right then.
Cradle of the Snake.
You were going to say it anyway. Number
138.
Yes. It's very good. 138.
Wow. Okay.
I was just wondering, actually, talking about Alan T. Butcher's feedback, that there's a general election coming up in a few weeks, and I wonder if he's able to do that feedback because he's not in the general election, because he's been in the last two. Well, we seem to have one every 5 minutes here, so that's not any major achievement.
I thought I saw that he was going to be in the next election as well.
He is. Oh, good. That means I know two people in the general election. We got Richard. What was Alicia's old boss down at the chip shop? Richard. I can't remember his name.
The chip shop.
Yeah, the chip shop. And I don't mean digital chips. I mean potato ones.
Silicon chips.
I can't remember. Anyway, her old box is the Labour candidate for the Isle of Wight. And, of course, Alan T. Butcher is the Labour candidate for... Is it Bognor Regis or something like that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a good reason to move to Bognor Regis and vote for Alan. That's what I say. Although there are reasons I probably wouldn't do that. I'm not going to express political political tendencies on because I'm apolitical on this podcast because it's against the rules. But I do wish both Alan and Richard well in the election.
I'm certainly an apolitical person too.
Did you want me to post the link to his Facebook page, Alan Butcher for Bognor Regis and Little Hampton, or not?
No, because it's a politically, it's politically, because it's, yes, no, we don't, we can't, because it'll look like we're politically leaning politically towards concerned. A political party, political. Did I say political enough?
Like it's from, oh, yeah, it's, he's still, I know some of the poster from 2 years ago, but yeah, there's one from just 2 hours. 2 hours ago.
Yeah, all right, thank you. Moving away from general election things, all I wanted to say was good luck to the people that are listeners and fans of the show that are in the general election as potential MPs. Because it's
absolutely,
yes, I don't want to necessarily say I'm going to vote for them or anybody else should vote for them for that matter, because we don't talk about that sort of stuff on the show. We can wish people good luck. I'm moving away from that line of conversation immediately. Doctor Who News.
Mark Platt wrote that audio, by the way.
Did he?
Yeah.
Mark Platt.
Mark Platt.
Oh.
Mark M. Platt.
Yeah. No, he did was Battlefield? No, that was Ben Aronovich, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Ben Aronovich.
No, he did some of the...
anyway, never mind that. Doctor Who News is quite brief. Big Finish take the first Doctor back to Skaro. David Bradley, Gemma Powell, Jamie Glover and Claudia Grant return as the original yet slightly different TARDIS team in the fourth volume of audio drama series The First Doctor Adventures, for release in March 2020. And this time they'll be facing the Doctor's greatest foe, so it gives good old Nick Briggs something to do. The Daleks.
Daleks.
Yes.
Going back to Skaro.
Daleks.
Daleks, yes. Wow.
Daleks.
I wish I had to think of that. It does make me want to go and watch that wonderful drama. What was that one called? The Adventures in Space and Time.
The Prisoner?
Oh,
the
Prisoner.
Oh, I want to watch that again now, because I haven't seen that for a long time. Friend, family member of the, well, uncle of the show, or whatever you want to call him, Toby Haydock is the barman, the racist barman in that story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's it, really, because the other bit of news is Sophie Aldred, who couldn't be on the show this week because her publishers haven't given it the go-ahead, basically, for her to come on and talk about her book. So hopefully...
There's another bit of news, actually.
Congratulations. When did you?
You're pregnant.
I sure am, yes. No, I'm just being pregnant, actually. The official Doctor Who social media pages are telling us to watch this space... for the 23rd of this month.
That'll be Children in Need, by any chance?
Looks like there's a trailer coming for something, either the Christmas special or New Year's special.
There's a bit of that.
Or next year's episodes.
Yeah, there's a bit of that, and there's a bit of Jodie Whittaker singing in it.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Right. Doctor Who merchandise you can purchase at lavazi.co.uk, including a T-shirt I got a few weeks ago and still haven't worn yet. The 13th Doctor... What?
Who?
Lavazzi.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Well, you haven't heard of Lavazzi?
Lavazzi, yeah.
Make your mind up. Anyway, yeah, so I have got
these great scarves. I've got one right up here.
Are you wearing it?
No. Oh.
Anyway, yes, 13th Doctor T-shirts. I've got an XXL one. Yes, I've got a man-sized 13th Doctor T-shirt. They also sell the 13th Doctor scarves. It would be lovely if they could sell the jackets as well. Then I could get a blonde wig and go as a 13th Doctor to a cosplay.
Me.
What?
It's
why not?
Be a very
we've had women going as the sex doctor and stuff, and the second doctor I've seen at conventions. Along with that, you can get the beautiful TARDIS laptop bag, which Debbie's been hinting for. That's not my Debbie, it's Debbie, the other Debbie, who just, you know, that one. The tall one.
Debbie L. Melrose.
Yeah, that one. She wants one. I'm not getting her one. I just put it out there. I'm not going to be buying. If I bought Debbie Melrose this TARDIS laptop bag, the Debbie that I reside with would go a very strange colour, and then I may not be doing any podcasts anymore. Not necessarily in that order. Right then, and we also have Pandorica open gloves with artwork by Vincent Van... That one's for Billy Kirkbright.
You do that.
I was thinking about that the other day, because Billy made a point of just saying that he found that quite funny. That's from the actual scene from the episode, isn't it? When... who's that actor, isn't it? He did a stunt part in it. And when they're having a tour around the... in the episode Vincent and the Doctor, when they're having a little tour around the art museum thingy. And the
Bill Nye,
that's it.
He said
it's actually pronounced Vincent Van.
He's the octopus guy in Pirates of the Caribbean.
He emphasised the pronunciation, the articulation of how to say Vincent Van.
It did kind of draw me out of a very tragic scene, to be honest. To hear somebody go.
it's just so funny that the Americans call him Vincent Van Gogh, but the pronunciation is so ridiculous, you might as well just go with Van Gogh.
I agree.
No, because that's incorrect.
Yeah. No, but so is Vincent Van... Oh, dear, I spat all over my screen. Two with the Cybermen, a Doctor Who scarf.
I think you need a throat lozenge.
No, I've got glass of water.
Just a hairball.
The Tube of the Cybermen scarf, the TARDIS jumper. Now, we'll say about this TARDIS jumper.
I was just informed by Julia that she gave one of our cats her hairball medicine a few minutes ago, so I don't have to do it.
Is that what reminded you? Me choking on a pronunciation and reminded you of furballs.
We were just mentioning it.
Yeah. Anyway, right, so the TARDIS Christmas jumper. Hat. Will you stop talking over my plug for Lavazzi? I've got one of these, but all I ever get when I wear it is persecution, because it's a 2XL jumper that fits me ridiculously snugly. But it's a lovely jumper. The Doctor Who Season 18 Burgundy scarf, which I must get out of mothballs because it's getting very cold here in the United Kingdom. And as I'm the only British person on the show today, I will emphasise that fact. The TARDIS knitted
tie. Excuse me, I was born in the UK.
Yeah, but you're not here at the moment. You're not experiencing the dipping temperatures.
TARDIS, in January.
What
is the weather right now in Australia?
Hot.
Hot and it's lots of... Chilly, lots
very
of,
hot the other day. Did you see the...
Fires and stuff.
My temperature?
No.
Yeah, it's like 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, my gosh.
Surely
wow.
That's
wow.
That everything be boiling above that temperature. Isn't it not possible?
100, very, 100 very hot. Degrees is boiling, isn't it?
It's more than boiling.
No, that's in Celsius, though.
Oh, that's because you put your thermometer in the middle.
Yeah.
Is it because you got your thermometer in the middle of one of those bushfire thingies? It would be quite hot there,
no.
Wouldn't it?
There was a bushfire in my suburb, but I think some of these idiots who go around.
Yeah, it's pointless
fires.
Having a smoke alarm under those circumstances, isn't it? Anyway, back to my plug for Lavazzi. Yeah, you can get the TARDIS
Lavazzi.
Bobble
Lavazzi.
Hat,
Lavazzi.
The TARDIS and Dalek Christmas scarf. The Pandorica opens, obviously, with artwork painted by Vincent Van... and Doctor Who tie, Tom Baker. And, you can get the 7th Doctor hanky, and they've actually put a picture of how to wear it. You wrap it around a hat that the 7th Doctor would have worn. So that's what the hanky's for. It's really quite cool, amongst other things. So Doctor Who merchandise.
The Paisley one, is it?
Yeah, the Paisley one. Lavazzi.co.uk for stuff for Christmas. And if you want to buy me any of that stuff, happy to take it. Message me on the 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. So it means that we move on to whoone.co.uk.
Is that
whoone.co.uk?
Whoone.co.uk.
Oh, shut up, yes. Latest
what is
product.
It, Mary?
Leave Mary out of this. Right then, coming soon, the 8th Doctor Ravenous 4, Early Adventures. The Early Adventures, 6.2, Daughter of the Gods. The Interstitial?
Yes.
Feast.
It is interstitial.
Oh, sorry, and Feast of Fear. Oh, there's so much Big Finish stuff coming out. They must be raking it in.
Some Lost stories coming out.
Is there?
You know when the show got cancelled? Well, not cancelled, but was on hiatus back in the 80s.
Yes.
There was a story that was proposed. They've only just, in the last couple of years, been given sort of permission to go and make it. So they've just made it, and it's being released later this month.
Wow. Well, that's a very interesting piece of news.
What one is called, Mary?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you remember the
drifted.
Name of it?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, it's damn.
Wally
sorry
K.
about
Daly.
Listeners. I just thumped my microphone. Sorry about that. So I'm just seeing how much time I've got left to record. again, if you want to buy your Doctor Who fan, and I will say that Nick, be quiet, that Nick at who1.co.uk says that nobody wants to buy Doctor Who stuff anymore. So prove him wrong.
The ultimate evil. There you go.
What, Nick?
Whoa.
I don't think he'd appreciate that.
That's the name of the story.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, go to who1.co.uk and buy your Doctor Who fan loved one a thing for Christmas or their birthday.
Speaking of Big Finish.
Were you? I don't remember.
Were you?
Yeah, you mentioned they were selling Big Finish at who1.co.uk. The First Doctor and the team of people who are doing the voices of Ian, Barbara and Susan are coming back for another adventure, apparently.
Didn't I just say that? Oh, the original voices, Ian, Barbara and Susan.
They've got people impersonating them.
He's talking about the story that you talked about in the Doctor Who news.
So you're saying that Reese wasn't listening to me when I did the Doctor Who news feature? What a surprise.
He talked about the fifth series coming out next year. That's the one with the return to Skaro and the Daleks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Which reminds me, I was looking through my old jingles and effects folder the other day, and I stumbled across a couple of very interesting bumpers that not necessarily ours, including this one.
I know what you're talking about.
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to Who's the Man podcast.
Oh,
I remember that.
Yeah. Wow. Was it that podcast?
The podcast? Yeah, that was.
Are you gonna rev that up again?
I don't know.
And we got loads of little. You know, little bumpers from the early days that were put in specifically to cover people like Robert, like this one.
Do not deviate!
Did you hear that beeping noise? That's my recorder running out of time, so I'm going to have to stop now. That's a shame. I was just a bit going to enjoy playing these old bumpers.
I remember the old days of when I first started listening to Doctor Who podcasts, where this youngster was doing feedback on every
seconds,
one of them.
30 seconds.
Yes, he was, wasn't
anyway,
he?
Well, anyway, thanks, guys, for joining us. Please join us again. And thank you for listening to the show. Goodbye.
Sorry, Mustache.
Bye.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by who1.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.